are Locked On Pistons, your daily Detroit Pistons podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
4 seconds left. He's got the ball. He should have it. Isaiah hangs on the ball, flips it up to the Raptors. Detroit is the city of champions again.
Detroit basketball.
What's happening? Welcome to the Locked On Pistons podcast, your episode for Wednesday, January the 8th, and bad Blake news, but a win. This is your boy Matt Shook, the host of the Locked On Pistons podcast, the sports writer here in Detroit City covering the NBA for the Detroit News and Associated Press, Pistons fan and follower my whole life, and a sports newspaper reporter for over a decade as well. Thanks for listening. Thanks for spreading the word about the Locked On Pistons podcast. A strong start to 2020 numbers-wise. I appreciate the Pistons front office and ownership dropping a Woj bomb on us so that we can have a lot of things to talk about here in the beginning of this calendar year. But today we're going to talk about the latest news, Blake Griffin's surgery that he underwent on Tuesday. Going to run down the details from Tuesday night's win, my three takeaways from the game in Cleveland, and also going to tell you my thoughts about the trade deadline aftermath and what I think the Pistons should look like and the goals should be after any trades are made. But the goal should for you should be to follow me on Twitter at Matt_Shook, S-C-H-O-C-H, another underscore for that. Also the Locked On Pistons Twitter account, and check us out on Facebook at Locked On Pistons - Matt Shook. But the Pistons got some bad news on Tuesday in the afternoon as it was announced by the team that star forward Blake Griffin had surgery. The press release was as follows. The Detroit Pistons announced today that forward Blake Griffin underwent a successful arthroscopic debridement of his left knee. Griffin will undergo an extended rehabilitation period, and there is no timetable set for his return. So a lot of language doing a lot of work there in terms of what it means and some medical jargon in there as well. Arthroscopic debridement of his left knee. Rod Beard reached out to Dr. David Chow, of the kind of that NFL Twitter doctor that we all know about if you watch football on Sundays. But it described a debridement as a cleanup or oil, lube, or tune-up. So doesn't sound so bad in that area. But talking about rehab periods, the press release itself said an extended rehabilitation period. Obviously, that could mean a lot of different things, but a huge range of outcomes in terms of how arthroscopic surgery is recovered from. I mean, you've seen it where it's a couple of weeks, a few weeks, but certainly it's been a year at times for a player. We don't know much more than that, other than some of the beat guys are talking about how it seems like Blake Griffin might be out for the season. And obviously the direction of the franchise might have a little something to do with that. But getting the surgery done and maybe starting the rehab and having a healthy offseason is probably goal number one for this team as far as trade value and making the playoffs. Blake Griffin has basically no trade value right now, negative trade value to be more specific. You'd have to give up good assets to get away from the next 2 years in his contract. And also the playoff situation, we'll get into it here in a little bit, but certainly not something that the Pistons should be coveting as a main focus for the team for the rest of this season. Although, you know, if playoff appearance happens, that's not a bad thing, especially with the draft given how it is right now. But more on that later. On the court on Tuesday night, the Pistons got the win, 115-113, closing the six-game roadie at 2-4 with wins against the Cavaliers and Golden State Warriors, losses to the Spurs, Jazz, Clippers, and Lakers. But Tony Snell hit a three-pointer late in the last minute. And then Derrick Rose hits a floater for the win, the game-winning hoop. Andre Drummond finished it defensively with a block shot of Darius Garland. Another block late of Colin Sexton, about 2.5 minutes left. The second-year guard at Alabama tried to dunk on Andre Drummond and got sent back the other way. But Andre Drummond finishing off his strong game with some defensive plays at the end, finishing with 23 points and 20 assists, 5 assists for him. I'm sorry, 23 points, 20 rebounds, 5 assists, and only 5 turnovers, my favorite stat, 3 turnovers and 2 fouls. So whatever way you slice this one, a strong game from the big man who's been in the news this last week or so. 24 points and 7 assists for Derrick Rose. Off the bench for the Pistons, 9 of 21 from the field. Really struggled for the first quarter, and maybe quarter and a half or so, but came on in the second half, especially late in the fourth quarter. Blew a wide-open layup, but also made some big plays late for the Pistons there. 18 points for Tony Snell, 4 of 6 from 3. Some pure shots. I mean, they were just torpedoes that went right through the hoop. Nice to see him stroking it confidently, having one of his stronger games as a member of the Detroit Pistons. 15 points, 3 steals, and 2 rebounds for Sekou Doumbouya. As Rod said, one body as well. More on that later, but 12 points off the bench for Sofia Mykhailiuk. The Pistons were 18 of 21 from the free throw line for an 85.7% clip. Obviously very good there. Kevin Love, 30 points and 9 rebounds. Colin Sexton, 20 points for the Cavaliers. But to dig deeper into the Kevin Love versus Colin Sexton situation, how's this for some stats? 30 points for Kevin Love, 12 of 15 from the field. 20 points for Colin Sexton, 7 of 19 from the field. So that's right, 10 more points for Kevin Love despite shooting 4 less field goals than Colin Sexton. Kevin Love will not like looking at this box score. Saw some comments from Colin Sexton after the game that he was acknowledging that he should find more ways to get Kevin Love involved late in the game, and Kevin Love agrees with that statement. But the Pistons improved to 14 and 24, now in 10 games under 500, up from the low water mark of 11 that they've been at a couple times in this past week or so. Pistons improved to 7 and 10 against bad teams, so climbing back into 500 or so on that realm at least could be a good thing for the Pistons going forward. They'll have their chances coming up soon. The loss from the Brooklyn Nets on Tuesday night in overtime against Oklahoma City means that Detroit is now just 3 games out of the Eastern Conference playoff hunt. Brooklyn in 8th, Orlando moving up to 7th. The Pistons with the win did move ahead of the Chicago Bulls for 10th place in the Eastern Conference by a half game. 10 of 11 of the next games for the Pistons are against teams under 500, and I believe 15 of the next 19 are also against teams under 500, leading right up to the All-Star break, when afterwards they have the toughest schedule in the NBA based on the offseason. I don't know if the fluctuations on the Golden States of the world or how some of the teams look now as opposed to how they looked earlier this year, if that's changed that formula. I will reach out to a couple people and find out about that myself. But the Pistons now just a half game under Charlotte for the 9th place in the Eastern Conference. And like I said, easy schedule coming up next. Home, back home for 3 on against Cleveland on Thursday to start the homestand. Chicago on Saturday. The New Orleans Pelicans on Monday. And what could be, who knows, Zion Williamson's career debut. Road game on Wednesday at Boston for a tough game, obviously, that they'll be heavy underdogs for. But after that, Atlanta, Washington, Sacramento, Memphis, Brooklyn, Cleveland, Brooklyn again. So there's a path to win a lot of games. I warned you about this a couple weeks ago. First, you heard it here on Locked On Pistons that this time was coming, the easy part of the schedule. I told you to formulate your opinion about what this team should do before it got too low from this West Coast trip and before it might get artificially high in this next week, 2 weeks, maybe even 3 weeks. You shouldn't make your decision based on them being at the low after the Lakers game at 11 games under 500, but maybe after this stretch they're like 5 or 6 games under 500. So you kind of maybe should decide in your mind that this is like a 7 or 8 or 9 games under 500 team coming up that they've been playing like so far, like a 37-win type of team, a team that could get in the 8th seed, maybe fall just short, realistically fall a little bit, 1, 2, 3 games short of that 8th spot. But does that do anything for you? Does that change how you feel going into the trade deadline? It shouldn't. More on that later. But things you should feel comfortably about is you're following the Locked On NBA Net handle on Twitter. It's a collection of all the hosts on one Twitter feed. It's really cool during the day to catch up on all the news and also during a full slate of game. Great stuff as well. Sekou all over everyone's feeds, as you can imagine. On Instagram, that same handle, Locked On NBA Net, highlighting the biggest stories of the NBA. But up next, I got my 3 big takeaways from the win in Cleveland. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast.
Yes, sir!
All right, a little bit later on, I'm going to tell you about what the aftermath of the trade deadline should look like for the Detroit Pistons. Is it tank season? Should they lose on purpose? We'll talk about that a little bit later. But the 3 takeaways from Tuesday night in Cleveland, my number three one, I got to brag about this every now and then, so I pulled up some of the numbers. The Christian Wood home road splits. If you listen to the Locked On Pistons podcast, you're probably sick of hearing about it. But during the preseason, he had a particularly good home game, and that's Christian Wood, first year as a Piston. I just thought, man, this guy's going to really, just seems like one of those guys that's going to really benefit from the home crowd, really benefit from being comfortable in atmospheres. Didn't really have anything much to base that on other than a gut feeling. I think about it like the alternators back in the day in the Jerry Stackhouse, Rick Carlisle days that the Pistons kind of came of age that ultimately led to the OFAR championship years down the line. But the Zelly Rabracha types, the John Barry types, the Corliss Williamson types, those guys that came in and really fed off the crowd. I always kind of thought Christian Wood is kind of one of those guys. I don't know if he ever, you know, where his game goes from here, if he ever turns into that starting center type or starting four type. I don't know. I mean, I kind of see him as that bench energy guy on a good team, that even he kind of grows into that. Now, I know a lot of you guys probably have higher hopes from him, but that's another discussion, and we'll find out that answers to those questions down the road. But for now, I was completely right about the home and away stats on Tuesday night. 6 points and six rebounds, 1 of 4 from three-point land. So that means now that at home, Christian Wood is averaging 11 points per game and 5.5 rebounds. On the road, 8.1 points per game and 4.7 rebounds. So that's almost 3 full points per game for home as opposed to road, and almost 1 full rebound per game home as opposed to road. Now, you're probably thinking to yourself, well, those are just counting numbers. I'm sure maybe he's playing more minutes at home, so that could be contributing to that. Actually, no. He's playing 17.5 minutes on the road and 15.5 minutes at home. So 2 full minutes more on the road, and the numbers are considerably lower. That's all backed up by the efficiency numbers. At home, he's shooting 52.2% from three, and on the road, 25.8% from three. So more than double in terms of how good he is percentage-wise from three at home, and then from the field, 67%, as opposed to 50% from the field on the road. So 17% difference there. Coincidentally, exactly 50 out of 100 on field goals away from home so far this year for Christian Wood. So I'm very proud of myself, and obviously every couple few weeks I like to bring up that stat and do a little victory lap there. But the second biggest takeaway was Andre Drummond and the damn good game that he played in the middle for the Detroit Pistons, his first good game since the Woj bomb on Friday. Cleveland is perfect for him to feast on. They don't really have a center. They got Kevin Love down there, decent rebounder, obviously great, outstanding outlet passer, but not much of a defensive player at all. And Tristan Thompson's just too small to hang with Andre Drummond. You can get away with Tristan Thompson as your best post defensive player as long as there's not a huge guy like Andre Drummond on the team. But we know Cleveland's reconfiguring their roster down the line, and obviously this is a team that's at rock bottom right now, so they need to figure out what they're doing. But yeah, again, Cleveland, and we'll see it again on Thursday with the Cavaliers. This is just the perfect team for Andre to do work there. So it's good for the Pistons to have two games against them on the schedule when Andre is probably getting heavily scouted right now. But that 23-20, real nice. Always good to get that 20-20, boost those kind of numbers up. I actually got, you know, you see on Reddit, I saw an Atlanta Hawks fan after the Woj bomb on Friday watch the I think it must have been the Warriors game as the first game, and then the Lakers game after that, and posting on Reddit about, man, I haven't really watched this guy that much, but I don't like him. What was wrong with him in the last 5 minutes of that game? All that kind of stuff. And then I'm getting texts from some Dallas Mavericks fans that I know that weren't all that excited about the trade, but then they watched the game tonight against the Cleveland Cavaliers, and he says, yeah, let's do the deal. Like, what do we have to do to get this done? Again, we talked it over, sent some texts back and forth. They got the Courtney Lee expiring. Dwight Powell is a decent player, is under a reasonable contract for a few years. If you want to bring him into the mix as a tough-minded defensive player that would fit my mold for what this team should look like. Problem is, they can't trade any of their first-round picks over the next 5 years. They don't have two of them, and because of the Stepien rule, they can't trade the other three that they have in the alternate years that they do have picks. You can't trade multiple future first-round picks in consecutive years. You have to have one of them, whether it be yours or someone else's. So maybe there's a world where Dallas can peel off one of their assets, get a late first-round pick, and maybe trade that one or their own to the Pistons for Andre Drummond. So another Andre Drummond note, I'm not going to get much into the trade discussions today. We'll get back into that later this week. But Bobby Marks of ESPN.com, an insider article, also mentioned you know, where the Pistons are at on some of this stuff. And he kind of talked about how Luke Kennard and Sekou Doumbouya were untouchable. I agree on the Sekou front. Luke Kennard shouldn't be untouchable, but I think with the knee tendonitis, I think you've pretty much decreased his value enough there to where this wouldn't be the right time to trade him. I don't know that Luke Kennard is ultimately going to be part of this team when they're good again down the line years from now. I think that's something that we need to keep in mind with the Pistons. Whatever player we're talking about, that certainly we see guys as certain cornerstones and possibly future starters and future contributors and rotation players for this team. But don't get married to any single one of them, because a smart team is going to make a lot of moves, is going to trade some of the pretty good assets for really good assets. You know, if you can, like we talked about with possibly acquiring John Collins from Atlanta in this Andre Drummond deal. That doesn't happen just on Andre Drummond for John Collins, but maybe if the Pistons threw on a future asset of their own, let's say you want to throw Andre Drummond and Svi Mykhailiuk or something like that to get a John Collins. You know, those are the kind of things you need to think about. That don't just say, you know, this is our starting five. We got a four in Sekou. We got a future point guard in Bruce Brown. We got a swing in Luke Kennard. Maybe Christian Wood's the starting five. So all we need is one more wing player. Well, that's not really how it works. You need to compile. The Pistons need another player or two who's going to be the second and third or first and second best players on these teams. It's nice to have Bruce Brown, who could be a fourth or fifth best player on a good team if he continues to develop and gets better over the years. I'd put Luke Kennard in that same category where the ceiling is like a fourth or fifth or sixth best player on a good team. Sekou, the hope is that he develops into a guy who's the first or second or third best player on a good team. Who knows if we'll ever get there? Way too early to say. But just something to keep in mind there. Bobby Marks of ESPN.com also talks about how the Hornets, Cavs, and Mavericks mentioned as teams that could be talking about Dre. And he also mentioned that the Pistons would have $36 million in cap space if Dre doesn't return. So Charlotte and Cleveland, add those to the teams that we can get crazy with on the trade machine. Did you like any of their young prospects? Do you have some regret about trading Kevin Porter Jr., injured now, but was really playing well before he got hurt the other night? Biggest takeaway from the night, this is the easy one. Sekou's dunk took it down the lane, boomed all over Tristan Thompson, and that dunk was everywhere. The highlight was everywhere, as it should be. You know, Twitter, Slam Magazine, SportsCenter, Rob Perez, Bleacher Report, everyone is anyone is talking about it. Everyone, all the analysts are making jokes about it or are bowing down. Pistons Twitter, we're all talking about how the bandwagon is full, so don't come aboard. And if you listen to the show, you know that I was all about trading up to get Sekou Doumbouya. I will not let you forget about that as well. But it kind of brought me back to a video I watched on Facebook the other day. I recommend this one. Find it on the NBA page. They did the plays of the decade on NBA.com of every team in the NBA. So what was their biggest play of the decade? Obviously, thinking about 10 years and all the playoff shots, all the dunks, all the buzzer beaters, kind of a collection of those kind of plays. You know, obviously the LeBron block in Game 7 against the Golden State Warriors for Cleveland, that's kind of the play of the decade, the iconic play for the iconic player of this decade. Dirk Nowitzki to win a finals game against Miami for Dallas, layup there in the lane. Ray Allen's shot for the Heat against the San Antonio Spurs, probably 1A with the LeBron block, maybe even number 2 on that list of biggest plays of the decade. When putting the LeBron Heat and Duncan Spurs thing into context there, they'd play again the following season. But just obviously, without question, a huge shot. Game 6 in the finals maybe hurts it a little bit as opposed to Game 7, but save the season for Miami for sure. Curry from deep against Oklahoma City from the logo, kind of a quintessential Curry shot. Paul Pierce to win the playoff game for Washington, as he was almost washed himself against Atlanta, the buzzer beater there. Just kind of naming some of these moments that kind of brought back some memories. Kawhi Leonard, maybe number 3 of the biggest plays of number 4. Number 4 biggest play of last decade. Kawhi Leonard, Game 7 last year against Philly, Round 2. I won't forget it. I was in the Aria Sportsbook Casino in Las Vegas. I'll be back in May this year. So get your applications in for being the guest host for that weekend, as well as we're looking for someone in a couple weeks as well. We got Chubbs jumping on, and we'll see maybe Joe Brown as well. So some guys lined up for that. But Kawhi, yeah, against Philly, I think that's number 4. Number 3, though, I'm going to go with Dame Lillard, the walk-off series win against the Thunder last year. Swept them, I believe. I think it was 4-0. Might have been overtime, too. But the highlight of that, where he makes the long 3 over Paul George. Just so many big moments around the NBA. And my point is that for the Detroit Pistons, the biggest moment of the decade was kind of a random 2-on-1 drive for Brandon Jennings in the Staples Center against the Los Angeles Lakers. Throws the pass off the backboard to Andre Drummond, and he dunks it. at Staples Center. And I mean, great play, of course, but, you know, cool, whatever. You know, it's just kind of emblematic of the past decade of the Pistons that that was the biggest play ever. It really wasn't even that impressive. It was, you know, a typical young Andre Drummond hard dunk, which were great. He's got great hops and great strength off of those. And Brandon Jennings was a fan favorite for a short time and a flashy player as well. Made some nice highlights there. But, man, also maybe would I argue that the Bullock shot against Toronto last year, that cut off that baseline out of bounds to beat Dwayne Casey's former team. But anyway, whatever way you slice it, we're splitting hairs at this point. The Pistons' last decade was all irrelevant. And really, not only that, but you watch this video – and it's almost like painful because a lot of the things happened against the Pistons. Of course, DeAndre Jordan's, you know, alley-oop dunk where he murdered Brandon Knight on that play. Y'all remember that one, of course. Josh Smith for the Atlanta Hawks was their biggest play of the decade. He slammed tap at the buzzer to give Atlanta a win, I believe, during a long win streak before he came to the Pistons. Tobias Harris had a game-winning dunk for Orlando against Kevin Durant and the Thunder that won a game for there. That was their biggest play. And then Derrick Rose, the bank for the Chicago Bulls to beat LeBron and the Cavaliers in the second round of an overtime game in Chicago, set everyone off there. We've talked about that play as being an iconic one of the past decade as well. But with Sekou, it's just good to have some nice highlights. Good to be talked about in a good context around the internet. Maybe the 2020 highlight of the decade could be a really significant one. Right now, obviously, Sekou has the leader in the clubhouse. We suspect that over time that might get changed, but just nice to dream. Nice to think about future big plays and that Sekou Doumbouya big dunk against Tristan Thompson on Tuesday night, one that we'll see over and over again and bring back some good memories to us. Hopefully better memories to come, iconic plays to come, buzzer beaters, great individual feats, great team feats. Hopefully all that stuff is to come for the Pistons in the 2020s. But up next, I'm going to give you my post-trade deadline Pistons plan, what they should look like after February 6th. That's coming up next here on the Locked On Pistons podcast, which is a proud member of the Locked On Network, your team every day. All right, trade deadline coming up February 6th. As you know, it's kind of the underlying thing about all things NBA, especially with the Detroit Pistons right now. Pistons will play on February 5th at home against Phoenix, so they have 15 games from now until then. Fast and furious schedule coming up for the Pistons in the next one day short of a month. Pistons coming in right now as after the win, 14-24, 38 games into the season, three away from the midway point of the year. But this means that the Phoenix game will be game 53 with 29 left at the trade deadline. Of those 15 games until the deadline, you got Denver, Toronto. I'm going to give them a split with Brooklyn and then losses to Boston as well. So losing all those games, losing to Denver, losing to Toronto, splitting with Brooklyn and losing to Boston. That means that, keep in mind that you maybe win one of those. Of the remaining 10 against really bad teams, I'll generously kind of say that they'll go 8-2. We're just throwing numbers out there right now. Get hot against those bad teams. Make their record against bad teams improved to over 500 at 15-12. So that puts the team generously at 23-30 at that point. So now you're 7 games under 500. You're probably, a game and a half out of the playoffs, something like that. And that's really kind of where I think this team ultimately ends up, keeping in mind that you got a really tough schedule after the All-Star break. You got to sell. You just got to do it. We've talked about the Andre Drummond rumors. Langston Galloway is someone who needs to go if you can get anything of value for him. And hopefully Derrick Rose, too. Although I've talked about it a bunch, I threw out a tweet out there. I was alarmed at, most everyone agreed, a lot of retweets, a lot of likes on it. But I had a little bit of a vocal minority that wanted to hold on to Derrick Rose unless I agree that you hold on to Derrick Rose if the offers are very minimal. But they just wanted to hold on him seemingly just for whatever. They did the same thing with Andre Drummond last year, and now they're going to get 55 cents on the dollar this season instead of trading him last year when he had a little bit more value. I will never understand people's emotions when it comes to Derrick Rose, but again, another discussion for another day. But so you see, make a couple trades, hopefully get some of these injured players back. But after the trade, you want to go full tank, right? You got to lose and get a better trade position as possible. Seems to be logical, seems to be what everyone thinks, especially if you're probably not going to the playoffs anyway. I say no. I'm anti-tank. I say You know, the front office makes moves to make the roster worse and trying to make the future better. That's a natural thing. So you're probably going to lose more games than you would before the trades, no doubt about that. But I think Dwayne Casey and the players who are left go get wins, maybe even still go to the playoffs. No harm in that, especially this season. I think it's a little bit of a special circumstances with this year, looking at the draft under some preliminary scouting and studying on that. I don't think this team is going to the playoffs, by the way. I've said that many times. But I wouldn't put the ceiling on it and say don't for sure. Hopefully you've got two shots at the draft, even though it's bad if you acquire that Brooklyn pick or something like that in an Andre Drummond deal, or maybe that first-round pick, if you get one for Dre, is down the road if the Oklahoma City pick in 2022, whatever it ends up being. But, you know, I do hope that the Pistons come out of the draft with a point guard, because this is a nice point guard draft. You got Maxey of Kentucky, Killian Hayes of France. You could have the French connection with Sekou there. But there's just, I don't see a lot of incentive to tank. In fact, it might even be the other way around. You know, you do want to get the first pick if you can get it. Anthony Edwards kind of fairly clearly number one right now at Georgia. It doesn't jump off the screen to you. Watch the game against Kentucky tonight. But after that, I mean, you got guys like James Wiseman, LaMelo Ball, bunch of others that are in that like 2 to 14, 15 spot. It's kind of pick your poison. Kind of like last year. It's just not a big difference between after Ja Morant. We all like the number one and number two picks. But after that, I mean, Darius Garland and Sekou Doumbouya, is there a big difference between those guys? Jarrett Culver and Nickeil Alexander-Walker, is there a big difference between those despite the fact that there's about 10 picks between those guys? You know, it's like whatever flavor you like, go after it. This draft, it's a big test for the scouting department to find the diamonds in the rough. And if you have two picks in the first round, which it seems like might be the case, you could even package those and move up if there's someone who you really think you want at number six or something like that. And I tell you this too, it might even be better to take a guy you like lower than the third or the fourth pick, because the way that the rookie salary structure is now, the lottery picks really get taken care of. The first, second, third, fourth picks. I mean, the first pick of the draft these days is getting $8.1 million, $7.2 million, and that was from this season. It'll go up next season. Let me pull up next season. It's $8.6 million for a rookie for the first pick of the draft, $7.7, $6.9. Yeah, sure, for 2 and 3. Anthony Edwards, yeah, that might be worth it at $8.6. And you wouldn't turn down. Of course, you'd take whoever you want, and you'd pay the money and bite the bullet. But I'm saying if you can get someone at number 9 that you kind of like at $3.9 million a year as opposed to someone at 4 at $6.2 million, it's a big difference. It's kind of could get you another player on your cap sheet going forward. So, you know, let's say you get number 2. You get James Wiseman or LaMelo Ball. You don't feel great about either of them. You're not convinced that they'd be really good. And you're paying $7.7 million and 120% escalating as the couple years go by as well. You know, I'd be better off finding a guy at 10 or 7 that you like just as much, especially with this draft and how kind of up and down people are on it. Like I said, the Sekou situation sliding down to 15 worked out just fine for the Pistons, and this might be another draft where that could work out too. So you're free to win, and hopefully you have the Brooklyn pick 2. Maybe they finish barely in the playoffs, which helps the value of that pick and still keeps it outside of the protections, which are lottery protected for next year, get you 2 bites of the apple for your first-round pick. Or, like I said, if you really like someone, you can maybe package them and trade up. Try to get more pieces to help this team win and move forward. And I got to tell you, I'm really positive about this right now. Feel good about the fact that Andre is going to be on the move hopefully soon. Hopefully the return is as good as it could possibly be at this point. But I think the injuries, particularly to Blake Griffin and the others, forcing this team to blow it up and sending Andre Drummond on his way. We appreciate Andre. We will remember the memories with Andre Drummond. But, you know, it caused the organization to rethink things, and I think that's overdue. I think most of you guys would agree with me on that. It's what this team needed, and I'm happy to see it. And I'd be much happier if they found suitors for Derrick Rose this month, too, but we will see how that turns out. But that'll do it for our show here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. Thanks for being with us this trade deadline season. I'm really enjoying the interaction with you guys. And looking forward to a few interesting weeks in Detroit Pistons history coming up here on the Locked On Pistons podcast. This is your host, Matt Shook, saying thanks for listening. Talk to you guys tomorrow.